content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. First story today is Trump signs pandemic relief bill after unemployment aid lapses, followed by in 2020, it wasn't all bad, here's what came out on top. And we'll begin with Trump signs pandemic relief bill after unemployment aid lapses. President Donald Trump on Sunday abruptly signed a measure providing $900 billion in pandemic aid and funding the government through September, ending last-minute turmoil he had created over legislation that will offer an economic lifeline to millions of Americans and avert government shutdown. The legislative package will provide billions of dollars for the distribution of a vaccine, funds for schools, small businesses, hospitals, and American families, and funding needed to keep the government open for the remainder of the fiscal year. The enactment came less than 48 hours before the government would have shut down and just days before an eviction moratorium and other critical pandemic relief provisions were set to expire. But it also came after two critical unemployment programs lapsed, guaranteeing a delay in benefits for millions of unemployed Americans. The crisis was one of Trump's own making after he blindsided lawmakers and White House officials with a videotaped implicit threat Tuesday to veto the package, which his top deputies had helped negotiate and which had cleared both chambers of Congress with overwhelming bipartisan support nearly a week ago. The 5,593-page legislation was flown to Florida, where the president is spending the winter holidays on Thursday and has been waiting for Trump's signature since. While the legislation provides for expanded and extended unemployment benefits, Trump's delay in signing the legislation allowed two critical programs to lapse this weekend and guarantees a delay in benefits for millions of Americans who had relied on the income. The legislation originally codified a weekly $300 federal benefit, about half the original benefit established in the March stimulus law, for 11 weeks and extended the two programs. With state unemployment agencies waiting for federal guidance on how to put the new legislation in place, it is unclear how quickly those programs could resume and whether the benefits would be retroactive to accommodate the delay. Because unemployment benefits are processed weekly and the legislation was not signed before the beginning of the week, it is likely that workers in most states will lose a week of benefits under the expanded program, as well as a week with a $300 supplemental benefit. They might get it at the back end, but there are bills tomorrow, said Michelle Evermore, a senior policy analyst for the National Employment Law Project, a nonprofit workers' rights group. It's just so frustrating that he couldn't have figured this out yesterday. One day of delay is catastrophe for millions. A Democratic aide on Sunday said most states would need guidance from the Labor Department to see if they could pay benefits for the week of December 27. The delay also jeopardized the time frame for distributing direct payments to Americans, which Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, had initially promised could be distributed as early as this week. The legislation provides for $600 payments for Americans, half the amount approved in the $2.2 trillion stimulus law in March, after lawmakers in both parties pushed for the inclusion of another round of payments. For families wondering how they will pay January rent or buy groceries, a weeks-long delay could have serious consequences. Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon, the top Democrat on the Senate Finance Committee, said in a statement Sunday evening, "While it's a huge relief that the bill is being signed, Don Trump's tantrum has created unnecessary hardship and stress for millions of families." Congressional leaders and Mnuchin, the emissary dispatched on behalf of the White House, had spent most of December racing to break a months-long impasse over how to provide the most significant infusion of federal pandemic relief since April and address a number of provisions set to lapse at the end of the month. But having been largely sidelined from the negotiations, the president suddenly threatened to withhold his signature over an unexpected demand to more than triple the $600 direct payments to $2,000 and his concerns over government funding provisions that provided foreign aid. Republicans had insisted on curtailing the size of the direct payments to accommodate conservative concerns about the size of the package, and the provisions Trump singled out were in line with the president's budget request this year. It's called the COVID relief bill, but it has almost nothing to do with COVID, Trump said in a video filmed at the White House on Tuesday, just 24 hours after Congress approved the legislation. Congress found plenty of money for foreign countries, lobbyists, and special interests while sending the bare minimum to the American people. Over the holiday weekend spent at his Florida estate and golf club, Trump appeared to double down on his resistance to the legislation. But in an abrupt reversal Sunday evening, he suddenly teased good news on the COVID relief bill information to follow. Lawmakers in both parties spent the weekend urging Trump to sign the bill and reverse course, with a bipartisan group of lawmakers who had helped break a months-long logjam in Congress over stimulus aid, urging either an immediate signature or a veto in order to allow those in favor to act before it's too late. "I understand he wants to be remembered for advocating big checks," Senator Patrick Toomey, Republican from Pennsylvania, said on Fox News Sunday. "But the danger is he'll be remembered for chaos and misery and erratic behavior if he allows this to expire." Trump's delay in signing the measure had left desperate Americans on edge as their unemployment benefits lapsed. One of those who had waited to hear what the president would do, Melissa Martinez, 52, of Westminster, Colorado, said she had applied for more than 50 jobs since being laid off as an operations manager for a transportation company in April. Like millions of others, her unemployment benefits expired the day after Christmas. "I am out of options," she said. Jennifer Bryant and her family needed the aid in the stimulus bill to keep their home in Flowery Branch, Georgia. She and her fiancé, who have five children between them, had been collecting the now-expired unemployment benefits. Besides the extension of those benefits, the relief package will keep in place a moratorium on evictions that will otherwise expire on December 31st. "When Congress passed it, it was the biggest sigh of relief for us," said Bryant, 39, who is about $10,000 behind on her rent. But then she watched the video Trump posted on Twitter on Tuesday, in which he called the bill a disgrace and implied he would not sign it. "I went to bed in tears," Bryant said, "before Trump signed the bill. To have our hope pulled out from under us, our lifeline, it's devastating." And next, in 2020, it wasn't all bad. Here's what came out on top. We may think of 2020 as a year of seemingly endless bad news, as the pandemic threatened our health, forced us to stay at home, and upended most facets of life. But it wasn't all bad. Here are some of the things that managed to come out on top. Rescue animals. In a pandemic, a young man's and pretty much everyone else's fancy lightly turns to thoughts of pets, or so it seemed this year anyway, as the hottest commodity during the lockdown after toilet paper and sourdough starters turned out to be rescue puppies and other critters. Stuck in our homes, starved of emotional interaction, suddenly we viewed those formerly unwanted animals in a new light. Their needs gave a structure to formless days. Their affection was an antidote to the loneliness of social distancing. Their energy was an excuse to get out of the house. The race to adopt was on as of April when Wired reported all over the country from New York to Wisconsin and North Carolina to Colorado and New Mexico, animal shelters are reporting massive upswings in the numbers of animals they've been able to adopt out or place in foster homes. By August, some organizations had waiting lists. When holiday season rolled around, gift givers had to start thinking hamsters. Now we're all barking up the same tree. Rotten bananas. Toilet paper has always been popular, even if we never quite acknowledged it. Hand sanitizer may be in the news more than ever. Was it ever in the news before? But ask any mother with a small bottle attached to her keychain or a teacher writing a school supply list. Well, before 2020, was it a staple? But rotten bananas? Rotten bananas have had a pandemic-fueled geek-to-chic glow-up. Before this year, rotten bananas were a reminder of our waste, our excess, our inability to forsake the egg and cheese on a roll in favor of making a healthy smoothie for breakfast like we promised ourselves we would do when we bought groceries. As we rushed from home to work or social gatherings, we never made the smoothie. We always got the roll and our bananas idled, getting mushy and bruised. Then came 2020, a months-long opportunity to re-examine all that we once wrote off as without value and to bake banana bread, relying on some very basic ingredients and our smushy brown fruit fly-attracting treasured rotten bananas. Screen time. Before this year, screen time was a hotly contested parenting topic. On one end of the spectrum was the zero-tolerance crowd who were certain that touch screens would short-circuit a toddler's neurons and destroy a teenager's life. On the other were the all-screens crowd who wanted to teach their children coding as a second language. In 2020, even the most organic Montessori toy mom had to hand over the iPad for at least a little while each day to preserve her fraying sanity. Who knows if it will stick, but screens are here to stay for everyone until at least the end of 2021. Streamers. There was perhaps no group of creators more prepared for the horrors of 2020 than streamers. Sitting in front of their cameras, often alone, talking for hours to the camera is what they do, and many are excellent at it. As those in traditional media struggle to entertain audiences on platforms like Instagram Live and Twitch, streamers were perfectly positioned to capture the moment. They hosted gaming tournaments, debates, and news coverage. They provided millions of bored Americans with educational content, streaming themselves cooking, baking bread, and crafting. They hosted politicians, including Representatives Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Democrat New York, and Ilhan Omar, Democrat Minnesota, who used the streamers to help encourage young people to vote. All of this contributed to a live streaming boom in 2020. Twitch hit a high in terms of monthly hours watched, with 1.7 billion hours watched in November alone, according to a report from Stream Elements, a live streaming tools and services provider, and Arsenal.gg, an analytics firm. Chatting channels, where streamers talk with their audience, became the most popular category as quarantine took hold and people grasped for social connection. Streamers also capture the political moment. The 29-year-old progressive political commentator Hassan Piker rose to the top of Twitch in November after more than 80 hours of live election coverage. As the Black Lives Matter movement spread this summer, Twitch became a hub for airing the sit-ins and marches over racial inequality, the New York Times reported. Outside of Twitch, popular influencers who had only dipped their toes into streaming began broadcasting hours of their lives, streaming themselves even as they slept. Messy people. I have a theory about living arrangements. The most important compatibility test is each person's tolerance to messiness. And as we all know, a mismatched messiness quotient among roommates can make things messy. So as lockdowns this year forced millions of Americans indoors and turned living spaces into working spaces and gym schools and bars, our collective MQs were pushed to the limit. Who can be bothered to pick up an empty water bottle or take those empty Amazon boxes to the recycling bin when the world is falling apart? If you, like me, are a messy person whose MQ matches that of the person you live with, well, this is our moment. No longer must we hide in the shadowy, dirty clothes piles and overflowing junk drawers of society. Tidying up for guests? Hosting guests is canceled. Need to clear the table for dinner? Nope, that's a workstation now. We're eating on the bed again, and as I wrote this from my standing desk at home, I paused to search for my yoga mat. Unable to find it, I asked my roommate to help. No luck. It's not like a small thing. How could we lose it? I asked her. She smirked and said, come on. Even the New Yorker, that most august and pristine of publications, acknowledged this lifestyle on a recent cover. It featured an illustration of a woman sitting at her home desk, fully put together from the waist up, just enough to look good for a Zoom happy hour. Outside of the view of her laptop's camera was a house in disarray. Therapy. When television writer Cord Jefferson accepted an Emmy for The Watchmen this year, he thanked his parents, his fellow writers, and the show's director. He also thanked his therapist, Ian, who he said had changed my life in many ways. Self-care may be the mental health tonic of the moment, but there's nothing like good old-fashioned talk therapy after 9 long, deadly months of a pandemic. These days, you're only human if you're falling apart. No, really. According to a new Gallup survey, Americans' assessment of our mental health is worse than it has been at any point in the last 2 decades. In the absence of national leadership, at least we've got our therapist. Of course, any winner of 2020 is probably also kind of a loser, or at least that's what my new therapist tells me. Therapy wins in that we could all use someone to talk to, and now we can do it from our couches. It wins in that there are startups working to close gaps in the system. Next, DMV will begin replacing old license plates in January. If your North Carolina license plate is at least 6 years old, the Division of Motor Vehicles is going to give you a new one when your registration comes up for renewal starting January 1st. It will be the first time that North Carolina has set a time limit for replacing a license plate. Up till now, you could keep the one you were given as long as it held up. Some on the road are decades old. But the General Assembly ordered DMV to begin replacing plates starting July 1, 2020. The date was pushed back 6 months after the DMV said it wasn't ready because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Vehicle owners will be notified if their plate is ready to be replaced when they get their registration renewal notice. They'll be given the option of renewing in person at a license plate agency where they will be handed the new plate, or by mail, in which case the replacement will arrive with the new registration card. There will be no additional charge for the new plate beyond the standard registration renewal fee and vehicle property tax payment. But replacing the plates will cost money. The DMV estimates the state will spend $16 million on the effort in the first year, including one-time IT and other costs, said spokesman Steve Abbott. After that, replacing existing plates will cost about $2 million a year. The DMV expects to replace 2.4 million plates the first year, Abbott said, and about 500,000 in the second year. On January 1, 2022, the state will begin to replace specialty license plates, including commercial, farm, taxi, and personalized plates. The specialty plates will be made with a new digital process. They'll still be aluminum and look just like other plates, but the letters and flat numbers will be flat rather than raised as they are now. Eventually, all the North Carolina license plates will be made this way. Vehicle owners will have the option of keeping their existing plate number or getting a new one. If they opt to keep the existing number, the replacement will be a flat plate as well. Owners will also be able to choose between the three standard backgrounds: First in Flight, First in Freedom, and God in Trust. In God We Trust. Once replaced, the old plates will no longer be valid, and DMV would like people to return them to their local license plate agency office so they won't be used for nefarious purposes. But there is no penalty for not returning one. The replacement plates use the latest in reflective technology to make them easier to see and read at night. They're also designed to be more legible by machines that read plates to assess tolls or allow vehicles to enter or exit parking areas. The idea originated in the General Assembly, which included the replacement requirement, in a bill approved last year, making other changes to motor vehicle laws. The DMV and the Department of Transportation say they didn't ask for it. Same for the State Highway Patrol and the NC Sheriff's Association, whose members will benefit from more legible plates. The first version of the bill mandating the replacement was introduced in the House and included a provision with detailed specifications for making the new plates reflective. WRAL-TV reported that those specifications belong to a particular product made by 3M. The Senate Transportation Committee later stripped out the detailed specs for making the plates reflective, restoring language that simply said the plates should be treated with reflectorized materials to make them easier to see at night. 3M was one of two companies that bid on the contract to provide the reflective coating on the plates 2 years ago, according to Abbott. The other was J.R. Wald, which already had the license tag contract with the state. Correction Enterprises, a program within the State Department of Public Safety, chose to continue with J.R. Wald, which uses reflective material from Avery Dennison Corporation. The law requires the plates to be replaced every 7 years. If yours will turn 7 in the coming year, DMV will replace it. The new plates will be made by inmates at the NC Correctional Institution for Women in Raleigh. About 60 inmates work about 35 hours a week in the prison's license tag plant. where in addition to work experience, they receive between 20 and 28 cents an hour based on seniority, said Jerry Higgins, spokesman for the state correction system. The women inmates already churn out between 2.5 million and 3 million plates a year for vehicles being registered in the state for the first time. With the replacement plates this coming year, they'll make nearly double that many. Next, Knight set the price for chess sets. If you bought a wooden chess set after watching the Queen's Gambit, the price you paid was most likely dictated by just four pieces. The knights alone can account for as much as 50% of the cost of a nice wooden set. While the rest of the pieces can be machine-made, the knights are carved by hand to resemble the head of a horse, a tedious process to make sure all four are exactly the same. The knights in the set used in World Chess Championship matches, $310 for the pieces and $220 for the board, were inspired by a horse carving from the Parthenon in Athens, Greece, said Ilya Merenzon, chief executive of the World Chess, the company that licensed the rights to the matches. The process of creating the set when it was redesigned in 2013 required extensive back-and-forth communication with carvers in India to discuss minutiae like the horse's smile. About 10 people specialize in carving knights for the World Chess sets, Merenzon said. It takes about 2 weeks to produce 100 sets, with a set of knights requiring about 6 hours to carve, he said. Chess set sales spiked 125% after the October premiere of The Queen's Gambit, a Netflix show about an orphan chess prodigy, Beth Harmon, who crushes the male-dominated game. Many sets sold out before Christmas. The House of Staunton in Alabama, one of the world's largest chess retailers, offers wooden sets with relatively simple knights, such as the $129 tournament-style set in boxwood and rosewood, as well as sets with more detail. They all go the way up to a luxurious $5,995 set in antiqued boxwood and ebony, featuring intricate horses. We have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Pat Perry, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.